Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, and today we are here in the Latte Lounge. Today's podcast on sex and relationships is sponsored by Silk Natural Lubricant. Vaginal dryness is a taboo subject that no one likes talking about. It can really affect your sex life and relationship. Well, don't let it. A good natural quality lubricant like Silk that is water-based, pH-friendly, and free from hormones and parabens can make all the difference. Silk is available at larger boot stores and online. Welcome, Katie, to the Latte Lounge.
Hi, Donna. Thanks for having me back.
Fantastic. What's been going on?
Well, this podcast was meant to be February around Valentine's Day, but I had a little surprise. I went out for dinner, and the next thing I knew, I was having my gallbladder out, which is not what you expect on a Saturday night out with friends. So I have been recovering from that.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Very dramatic.
Very dramatic. I don't do things by halves. So we had planned this fabulous podcast around Valentine's Day, but we have moved it to March, which is fine because, hey, love, relationship, sex, it doesn't matter what month it is. It's
yeah, March all still. Good. Love, sex, relationships, April.
It's spring, guys.
Love, sex, relationships is what keeps us motoring along.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Absolutely, yeah.
So who is going to be talking to us about love, sex, and relationships?
Absolutely. Well, today I've brought into the Latte Lounge, we have brought Francine Kay with us. Francine is one of the UK's leading relationship counsellors. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Francine because she's actually one of our bloggers on the website as well.
Oh, great.
Francine's own story has informed her life and her relationships. In fact, it would be near on impossible for her to do her job if she didn't understand her own story and its impact. She's been married. She's a single parent. Well, she has been a single parent and lonely in times. She's been in lots of new relationships and made the same mistakes. She studied every kind of core wounding and its projections and impacts. And finally, when she was happy to be contentedly single, she's fallen back in love again, which I'm very happy to say. She's recently got engaged. I'm not telling you what age she is. I'll leave that to her. But Francine, she's studied relentlessly over the years and she's totally reinvented her career. And because of all these life experiences, she knows how relationships work inside and out. She's worked with hundreds of couples from every culture and religion. And she's discovered that what every single one of us wants is to be loved, accepted, and understood. After all, none of us come with an operating manual because we're always a work in progress, aren't we, Francine?
We certainly are. Absolutely always a work in progress.
So
thank
welcome,
you for having me.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Welcome
thank
to
you.
The Latte Lounge. Now, before I chat with Francine, I also just want to very quickly introduce you to our next lovely guest, Samantha Evans.
Hello.
Welcome, Samantha. And I'm going to give you a quick bit of background about Samantha. We've actually become Twitter buddies, so it's the first time we've met.
Yes.
Samantha co-founded Joe Divine. It's an online sex toy company with her husband Paul in 2007. Being 51, menopausal and married for 21 years with three teenage kids, Samantha understands the effects that motherhood and the menopause can have upon relationships and sexual intimacy. And she's aware of the varied quality and often poor standard of sex education in schools in the UK. As a former nurse, Samantha is well aware of how healthcare professionals struggle to talk to their patients about sexual issues, and patients are reluctant to discuss intimate problems with their doctor. So to help healthcare professionals, Samantha's written extensively about sexual health issues, offering practical advice and recommending suitable products and signposting to other trained professionals who can help. So really welcome, Samantha. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And we also have to welcome Bushki into the Latte Lounge. If you hear, yes, if you hear some purring and some bell ringing, that's our...
That's not Samantha.
No.
It's not one of her
toys. No.
That's the Buddha cat.
Yeah, we're stroking away.
I think we better take a picture later and post it on the Latte Lounge or people will wonder. But yes, anyway, the reason I wanted to bring both these ladies in is because on the Latte Lounge Facebook group, we get a lot of midlife women who come to the group with relationship problems, or they're newly single or divorced, or they have lots of sort of sexual health problems, whether it's menopause or whatever it is, and, you know, after an operation. So what I'd like to do, if I may, is talk to Francine first. Francine, I just wondered if you wanted to tell everyone a bit about what it was like growing up for you and your family and why you left home at 17.
I think it's really important to know the background of all of our stories. That's my message, really. If there was a message I had today, it's about women understanding their background stories, how those stories impact their lives, how they use those stories as a strategy for their own survival, but how they take those stories into relationship and how very often they're not appropriate and they don't get the emotional responses that they would like to have because they're still operating in an old sort of way. So when I was growing up in my family of origin, I was a child who was seen and not heard. My parents were laminated together and there was never really any space for me or my brother to expand ourselves as human beings. We were just like little seen and not heard children. So as a result of that and the result of how my mother and father were together, if I had a story that I've taken into my relationships, it's that I'm not important enough. Now, that one banner headline has been enough to influence the whole of my life, who I choose to be in relationship with, and how relationship works. There's tentacles of that, there's lots of subtleties of that as well, but there's my banner headline, and that's kind of what's informed who I am, what I do, and the people that I would choose to be in relationship with until I know any different. Does that make sense? Mm. Yeah.
Is that what you refer to as the core wound?
That's the core wound. That's the old wiring story. So what actually happens is because we're born into what I call an other-based society and we aren't mature, we're not like fish, we can't swim, we can't crawl like ants, we can't walk like dogs and cats. So we're the most immature of all the species. So because of that, we have to mold ourselves into what other wants us to be. So right from the get-go, we're doing an adaption process for our own survival. Otherwise, we won't survive. And that adaption then creates a whole paradigm, a whole strategy of how we live our lives, even if that's not entirely our personality. If that's what was wanted in our family of origin, that's how we'll be until we get older and we feel like we're in some kind of straitjacket or we've pitched up on a planet that we shouldn't really be on. So yes, that is the core wounding, and I'm running ahead of myself because I get so excited about this, but we go into relationship not for romance and roses round the door, but to end that story, to actually complete and grow out of the old story, for example, of mine, that I'm not important enough. So I'm going to keep on meeting people in life who make me feel like I'm not important enough, or I feel like I perceive that I'm not important enough, in order for me to grow past that. And that is the whole purpose of relationship.
So what was it that made you leave home at such a young age? And when did you first meet your first husband?
So I left home at 17 to go travelling because there was no place for me there. I couldn't have articulated it at that point. I just knew I wanted to leave. So I couldn't have articulated it, but there was no place for me. So I went travelling and I came to live in London and I lived in a series of very grotty bedsits and it was really difficult. So I was only young. And then after about 6 months, I met my husband. I was going to go to America, but I met my husband and I lived in the worst bedsit. And so he would put food in my fridge. He would take me out. He would, you know, he was like a knight in shining armor. But of course, there's no free lunch. So when you get married to somebody who's taken that role and you've taken the role of damsel in distress almost, there's going to be a price to be paid for that. And that was that we lived life his way and we did everything his way. So for the first 15 years of my life, I lived a very unconscious life. I remember the first day coming back from honeymoon and saying to him, oh, I must tell you what happened at work. And he said, I tell you what, why not, let's not talk about that. Why don't we just talk about us? So we spent the next 15 years talking about him.
That's very interesting. So when did you decide to become a counsellor straight away, or was that way after?
No, what actually happened was, it was interesting because all through that marriage, I didn't know it, but there were a series of affairs happening on his part. I didn't know this. And it got to the state, he didn't want children. We waited years. It was six years before I had my first child. And then he wasn't terribly interested. He wasn't too bad with the first one, second one, certainly not interested. And that was the beginning of a four-year affair for him that I still didn't know about with a friend, because it's usually geography, proximity. And he felt a little guilty. So he said to me, why don't you do anything one evening? Why don't you go out for the evening? So I thought, oh, yes, I think I'll do a drama course. So I went to the college and I queued up and I said, you know, I've come for the drama course. And they said, no, drama's off. There wasn't enough people who registered. And I said, I've got a Wednesday night. What else have you got? So they said, well, we've got counselling. So I said, I'll take it. Oh, wow. So went to the counselling, and the first session there, people were sort of saying, hello, you know, I'm here for this reason and whatever. And I'm like just sitting there. And this woman says, hello, my name is Helen. And she bursts into tears. And another lady says, oh, shall I put the kettle on? And I thought, this is much better than drama. This is the real thing.
Real drama.
This is the real thing.
Yeah.
The real thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that counselling found me.
And so you had two fairly small children then, didn't you? So when was it that you sort of plucked up that courage to think, I can't actually stay in this marriage? When did you just...
It was in the Edgware car park when a lady came up to me who owned a jewellery shop and said to me, oh, hello, Francine, did you like the bracelet? And I said, yes, it's lovely, thank you. And then got home and, of course, there was no bracelet. And then all the stuff hit the fan and... I kind of felt like I'd been given a get out of jail free card because that was it. I was done and I was ready to grow and I was ready to be independent. Children were 5 and 8. We had no money whatsoever. I took and he left. He'd left a lot of debt inside the house. I couldn't leave the house because you weren't allowed to make yourself homeless. So now I've got two small children, no money, to such an extent that I went to the bakery in Stanmore to buy a loaf of bread on a Friday and I didn't have the extra 20p. And I said, oh no, I'll have to leave it because I don't have that extra 20p. And the man behind me gave me 20p. Oh. I've never been so mortified. So I took three jobs. I worked one job in the morning, one in the afternoon, one in the evening. I did residential social work. I slogged my guts out and I was studying at the same time. And eventually I went to America to study something called parent effectiveness training whilst doing the counselling diploma as well. And when I came back, I tried to teach it, couldn't earn enough money, so eventually got a job as a fundraiser in a charity and worked full time, which was awful because the children were then being looked after by aunties who picked them up from school. And I just, the last straw was Red Bull had just come out, you know, that drink Red Bull.
Yeah.
And I was so tired this particular day. I pulled into a garage and I thought, oh, you know, it's meant to be an energy drink, this. I'll have one of those. And I thought, a bit small. I'll have a couple. So I had two and I didn't sleep for 2 days.
Oh, and it gives you palpitations,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, so that's so. And so that kind of like was a watershed. And I already started doing my coaching. Coaches Training Institute came to the country. Counselling had seemed a little claustrophobic because I couldn't take it into action.
Mm-hmm.
And the epiphany moment came when I realised with the work that I was doing that there was a reason that people broke up. I wanted to know what happened, why it happened and how it happened. And I phoned my ex-husband in the middle of the night and I said, I need you to come over. I need to ask you something. He said, the children right? Everybody right? I said, no, everything's fine, but I need you to come over. And he did. And I said to him when he got to the door, do you think it could be that during our marriage, I reacted towards you as if you were my father and you reacted towards me as if I was your mother? And he looked at me a bit blankly and I thought, you know what, I've got something. I don't know what it is that I've got, but I know I've got something. Mm. And I've spent the last 20 years honing a program that helps people to understand the story they take into their relationship, how their partners will trigger that story. how to grow past that, the communication that is needed. I wrote a book called The Divorce Doctor, which was published by Hay House, which I was thrilled about. And then I did 3 years on The Atricia Show, and I did 3 years on The Right Stuff on the television as the relationship expert. And then my career took off, and then it took off. And now I'm working with individuals and couples, anybody who's interested in how to make a relationship work. Although my agenda isn't whether they stay together or they live apart. That's not my agenda. My agenda is getting to the truth about the story, understanding how it marries somebody else's story, and either working that through, or if actually you really don't share the same values, morals, standards, whatever, that you say, thank you for having me very much. This was wonderful. I've got so far with you. We're complete.
Now, my listening to you talk like this, do you think you were very young at the time? So you're saying that, you know, you were, how old were you, 18 when you, no, how old were you when you got married?
When I got the married, first, yes. No, when I got married, I was 22.
Okay,
yeah, so you I was still, quite young.
You were still
yes.
quite young, so I think you're quite naive, both of you as couples coming in, and so you only have your role models as your parents.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, obviously, did it stop you ever, you know, wanting to be with another man? Or was there a point where you thought, actually, I want to be loved again and I want to try again? I mean, when was that sort of turning point where you thought, I'm ready to trust someone again and have...
Yeah.
A new relationship. Did you start dating straight away, or was it a...
So I did. When Mark left, I didn't do anything about it whilst he was still in the house at all.
Yeah.
So he left. At this point, the children are 5 and 8, and I'm 37.
Mm-hmm.
And I did date a little bit, but then within a short period of time, I'd made a very big choice, a very big decision. I had decided I would never remarry. And I would never have a man living in my house while my children were there.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that was the right or the wrong thing to do.
It strikes me that not only did you make the same choice in your relationship, you know, saying he was your father, you were his mother, but also you had created the same family as you had grown up with.
Absolutely. I truly believe until you understand what you're doing, you're going to phenomenologically, however you say it, you're going to find the same person, because the familiarity of that is what's attractive. Why would you be attracted to something that's so not beneficial to you in any way, so that you can work through it?
Yeah.
But unless you know how to do that, or you even know that that is the thing that needs to be done, you keep on choosing the same person over and over again. And women say to me, men would say to me, why do I seem to meet the same person? Mm. And I say, well, how many have you had? Mm. And they say, well, three. I've met three very similar people. Then the common denominator is you.
Yeah. And what about this time? So you're, first of all, congratulations
you
on
much.
Your engagement.
Thank you very much.
And I'm hoping this is it now. This
yes.
is the one.
Yes, I think this is, yes.
Do you feel it. That your fiancé is different to, you know, your
no.
ex-husband? You don't
no.
know?
No.
So are you?
No, I am.
You're different.
I am, yes.
Oh, okay.
So the other person doesn't have to be different. And also, because if you have an ingrained story, say you take mine, I'm not important enough, even if he made me 60% of the time important and 40% he's over there, if I'm still holding on to that story, that's what I'm going to focus on.
Mm.
So the trick is not the other person. Obviously, I've got somebody who's kind and lovely and good-hearted and a good soul. But if when he goes off to do his own thing, I'm tolerating what's going on for me if I do get a trigger like that, and I'm moving past it because I know how to do that now.
Mm.
Otherwise, what we do is in my next relationship after my husband was another 14-year relationship, because I'm not a quitter. So, and also, I mean, also in the slow learners group.
So. Got there
and also, yeah. You're not the important one in that yeah. equation.
Of
so,
not. Fair enough. Yeah. So, you know, then you choose somebody else who you find yourself colluding with them to be the most important one, because there's your story and you're living it out. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It's really interesting listening to you chat like this, because although I've thankfully been married to the same man for 25 years, When you look at parents and how they've shaped your life, I mean, I've got a wonderful set of parents, but my insecurities growing up was that because I had a high achieving, you know, father who was a surgeon and a very bright brother and sister and cousins, I grew up and it was my problem feeling that I wasn't intelligent, I wasn't capable. So I've always, you know, a bit like you said, I've never felt like I was good enough or I could do anything or clever enough or anything. And it's take, I mean, I'm turning 50 next month and I think it's taken me 50 years. And it was only last week where I finally turned around and I said to my husband, actually, I'm proud of myself. And I've never said that because I think as women, it's always easier to say, oh, I'm rubbish at that and they're better than that and I'm not good at this.
Not even just at women.
Yeah.
It's if your story is so hardwired in you that you're blinkered with it. That's the way that you live
But
out.
I wasn't actually, it's funny because I wasn't told I wasn't clever or good enough or anything. I think I don't actually know. That's another session. I think I have a session with Francie later, but it's not about me. But I think it's brilliant what you, this sort of area you've, it's very different, your way of thinking, because I know a lot of women come to the group and they're struggling in their relationships and there's a lot of arguing and a lot of sort of young kids and you put it down to, you know, pressure of work or whatever it is. But actually looking, turning it on its head and looking at it in the way you've said, actually, you know, you're bringing a story. And for us women to change our thinking, it's actually a lot easier, isn't it? To actually think, actually, I don't need to be this person. But I think I want to ask you, because I obviously want to chat to Samantha as well and we're short on time, but if what would your sort of top tip for women who are sort of struggling in a relationship or perhaps newly single or, you know, sadly widowed, where do you get that kind of inner courage to think I need to A, change, and B, I need to actually, you know, go out there and look for love or change the relationship I'm in? I mean, is it as simple as actually I just need to go and find counselling or, you know, is it...
So the courage to go out and do it generally comes from the pain of something. As human beings, we don't generally change until we're in pain.
Mm.
So if you're in a place where actually you're fed up with being single, you want to find love, you're disappointed that that went the way that it did, but you really do want to share your life, you have to be at that point to start off with. And then what you have to be able to do is to understand your own story, your own strategy. Mm. And, you know, that's why people come to work with me, because that's what they do. Literally in 2 hours, I can unpack a person's whole life story and then turn it round, because I'm changing them from the child strategy into the adult. Once you know your adult strategy, then you know how you react. Then you can understand how somebody else is triggering you. You can even understand them a whole lot better.
Mm.
So I would say, if when you talk about courage, if you are now in a place where you're ready and willing to go into another relationship, now is the time to do some work on yourself to prepare yourself for that for that new journey.
Mm.
Yeah.
It does occur to me that when we box ourselves into, say, that damsel in distress role, we box somebody else into being the Prince Charming role, and we don't allow them to develop in that relationship as well.
And that is, you know, that's the epitome of collusion. If I behave in a certain way and I buy into your behavior in that way, I'm colluding with you to maintain yours. You're colluding with me to maintain mine, and there's no growth in that. So somebody's got to step out of that. Somebody's got to step out of that.
I like your strategy, because it's very empowering. I'm bringing the story, and also it's an opportunity for me to change.
And it's even more than about the relationship. It isn't just about the relationship. It's about your own personal growth as well. Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic.
It's very exciting.
It's really interesting. Thank you so much.
I'm feeling so, what's my story? Let's go change it.
I'm going to go and rewrite our stories now. Oh, thank you, Francine. And we're going to chat, you know, a little bit more. But so I just want to turn to Samantha now, and obviously welcome again. But tell me a little bit first, or tell everyone a little bit first, about what you do now. You know, at the moment, you set up this, you tell us.
In 2007, my husband and I set up JoJovine, which is an online sex toy company, with the view that we would only sell sort of high quality sex toys, but we decided it would have to be skin safe sex toys and sexual lubricants, which we've stuck to. His background was IT. I was a former nurse, so we liked sex. That was the thing. But we'd had sexual health issues, both of us, myself particularly in my 20s and 30s. I'd experienced vaginismus, where the vagina tightens up. Sex had been painful. I hadn't told him. An awful lot of women don't tell their partners. Yeah. I'd endured painful sex. When he found out, he was upset. I asked for help, but there was no forthcoming help from any healthcare professional whatsoever, apart from a gynaecologist who told me to iron the gusset of my knickers to help me with thrush, which is, yeah, makes sense, but, you know, there was no, I kept getting recurrent infections, and that was my history, and it, you know, but went on to have three children, but anyway, I was looking after the children, so we wanted something to do, and basically we thought about Anne Summer's parties for couples. Thought there's nothing like this. So there was something in America called passion parties, which were a bit like Tupperware parties, but they were sex toy parties.
Yeah.
But we explored that with groups of friends, and actually some of the women said, "Well, I go to a party with other men there, but I don't want my partner there."
Oopsie. Yeah,
they meant, you know, they were happy for other women's partners to be there to talk about sex toys, but they didn't feel comfortable with their own partner. But I then showed people products, and they thought, "Oh, these are lovely." So literally, we set up. He was IT. He created the whole website. He's still the brains of it. And with that in mind, we started selling skin-safe sex toys. And actually, I was looking after the children. Came back into the company sort of properly about 6 years ago. But what can I do? And I was realizing the conversations I was having with people was they were having sexual health issues. A lot of people were buying products to help with vaginal tightness following a hysterectomy. They'd had cancer treatment. Partner had erectile dysfunction. They were struggling to orgasm. They'd lost their partner. We speak to a lot of widows on the phone, and very sad conversations, but we can turn it around, and they end up giggling at the end. So I thought, well, actually, there's a need for practical advice about what would be suitable, because some healthcare professionals were saying, well, go and buy a vibrator. Well, what do you buy? Where do I go? What should it look like? I feel too embarrassed to buy one in the high street. I don't shop online, or I'm not online. So that's what I started doing. We decided that Jo Divine, we would create a sexual health and pleasure resource with lots of practical advice from health, but also using my nursing background and knowledge to sort of, you know, the kinkier, quirkier side. So you can go from, you know, sort of sex after cancer to going to an intimate massage party, or, you know, exploring swinging. So we've got people writing for us who do that. So we didn't want to separate sexual health and sexual pleasure, because when your sexual health is out of kilter, it impacts upon your sexual pleasure. And I think they're often viewed as very separate. So
it's funny, because as Brits, we're obviously all very prudish and embarrassed. And I think, I don't know, you know, I always think the Americans are much more open and out there. But I think, you know, there's a lot of women on our group, you know, from 40, we're over 40, but even as, you know, hormones plummet, which, you know, I was to discover, that you don't realise that your kind of, you know, loss of libido or you know, the low estrogen is, you just keep it in, you're embarrassed, you would never talk about it. And I think, it, you know, I think it's great that, you know, you are so open. I mean, especially, you know, I had to have a hysterectomy last year, and I've had a lot of friends who have had a hysterectomy, and you almost feel as women, well, that's it, I'm done now. And that you sort of become almost, you're not female anymore. So
you've lost that femininity, and it's actually really important. My, basically, you know, my view is that I speak to a lot of women who, you know, are menopausal, they've been through hysterectomies, they've been through gynecological, really extensive gynecological treatments and surgery and cancer. And actually they're sort of saying, I just want to feel normal. I want to feel sexual. I don't want to be medicalised. You know, and I think it's that trying to get that back to you being a sort of a sexual being, because you lose that, because that part of you has gone, you know, and actually, you know, people mourn the loss of their ovaries and their womb. And it's like when women go through breast cancer and the loss of the breast, and it's completely normal. And we're actually just trying to make it easier to have that conversation. But I think it's offering people practical solutions. It's not rocket science, literally. Yes. But I'm amazed at when, you know, sort of people, they can't understand, you know, what you're talking about. And, you know, sort of a simple vibrator and a good lubricant. And, you know, often that can be just the one thing that may transform your sex life. But people don't talk about
it. They're embarrassed. Yeah. And actually, that's, you know, our group's quite good because we're all quite open. And, and I think once one person has the guts to say, I'm feeling this, you suddenly get this flood of about 400 messages. And it's great because we can all sort of signpost people. I mean, I saw that you're a member of the Royal College of Obs and Gynaes Women's Voice Involvement Panel. What do you talk about then, you know, in regards to how doctors can actually help women? You know, if I'm, you know, a woman going to see my doctor and I think, actually, I'm going to open up about this now.
Well, what we highlight on the group, because we're all from different backgrounds of women's health, so obviously I do talk about sexual intimacy and pleasure and vaginismus, because obviously that's my own personal story. But it's actually, we will sort of post articles or campaigns or anything that's going on, highlight what's happening now, because we've now got this Women's Health Task Force, which is being headed up by the RCOG president, Leslie Regan, which is absolutely brilliant. And what it is actually saying, we actually highlight good and bad experiences. So we'll often say, you know, this was a really good experience. Why can't this be replicated across the UK? Why are women having to fight for treatment? Why are they having to fight for you know, good, you know, menopause advice? Why are they having to fight, you know, after they've had a hysterectomy to have any help, or when they've had a gynecological cancer? Why isn't there any information afterwards? Why are they almost left sort of sailing in the wind? And, you know, it's so we actually highlight the really good things that are happening and actually work with the college. Who they are very involved with, sort of we're lay women, but working in women's health, some are sort of doctors as well. And we've got patient experts as well on the group. So they'll go out and teach med students, which is absolutely brilliant. Talk to them about, you know, heavy periods and the impact of not just on your health, but also on the fact that you've got to replace your mattress, which one student said, oh, I had never thought, you know, because these simple things that impact upon your life. So RCOG involve the panel, and they actually get us to, you know, help with leaflets and information that they want to put out there. And they are it is a very, you know, sort of, it's a two-way group, and we can actually highlight things that are going on and they will try and address things. So it, as from a group, and my daughter's on it, she's 19, so she was involved in their fertility
I was actually workshop. Going to ask you about your daughter, because I noticed you said she's a campaigner. Well, what I mean, you know, it's a bit like we've been talking about, you know, I know you know Diane Danziebrink, who runs the Menopause Support Network, and she's obviously campaigning, and obviously I'm a layperson helping her campaign as well, about how it's trying to get it on the curriculum from a young age, that we're not just talking about periods and having a baby, but actually taking it all the way through to perimenopause and menopause. So in the same way, you know, I notice your daughter is, you know, she's 19. How is she campaigning to sort of get it?
From the age of 16, she was invited to be on the Family Planning Association Youth Committee. She's actually just been in Brussels with the Why Safe conference, which is sort of a European and international youth sex education. So you've got sex educators in all sorts of countries. But she's also, as a result of being part of the Family Planning Association, she stood up in Parliament when Justin Greening was pushing for the compulsory sex education. And she's been spoken, she's as an activist, she set up an activism website at school, because she went to a girls' grammar school. Sex education was non-existent there. She was advising the girls. When she moved into sixth form, in particular, and the stuff that she heard, she was going, well, that's not true. And, you know, it's... But basically, and also her, she was a Stonewall youth campaigner, so the whole LGBTQ+, you know, she's actually campaigning that, because they often miss out on, you know, health, you know, certainly including menopause as well. But again, she worked with the Eve Appeal to get, you know, sort of cancer on the curriculum as well. And it's actually, you know, she actually said, why does it stop at babies? It's like, you know, because this isn't where it stopped. And recently it appeared in the press, didn't it? And it was like, well, I think the health minister said, well, we have to stop somewhere. And I thought, well, we don't stop somewhere.
And we don't stop paying taxes. So keep the education coming.
So we've got to stop the information. But actually somebody was saying, she was at a talk the other day, she and Ara, she was giving, oh, it's her husband giving the talk or something. And she said, he said something about, you know, on what happens and when women's, you know, sort of their eggs sort of decrease. And the lad put his hand up and he said, oh, this is called menopause. He knew it. The girls in the class
fabulous,
did it. But I think maybe his mum was going for it. But, you know, my children, and I've got two boys as well, 17 and 15, so they talk. And I go, yeah, my menopause and mum. You know, but it's
I get exactly the same. In fact, you and I both work with Jane Lewis, whose book is My Menopausal Vagina, and she's doing amazing work. And that book is on my dining room table. Yes. And my boys are mortified, but equally, they all come in from school and go, how are all the menopausal mums today? Exactly. You know, so, look, it's great. And also, the thing that worries me, and it's great that your daughter's doing this, is that there's so many women on the group who come saying, you know, I'm so worried about my young teens. They're all looking at porn. They're looking at porn from 11, 12, you know, it was never easily available. And that is a major worry. So I assume she's also sort of changing that whole,
That's why we need inclusive compulsory sex education, which is currently being debated in Parliament at the moment. And so basically I was involved with the FPAs talking to your children about porn, and it was actually, they've got some fabulous resources for parents, as have Brooke and Sex Ed Forum, and there are various sex educators out there. And it's actually having that conversation, because I think a lot of parents have no idea what their children are actually looking at. Yeah. You know, I have to say, you know, parents get caught out all the time. And actually, my children know, they know, they go, well, it's active sex, it's not real sex. But if that's the only form of sex education you're having,
you assume that's it.
Yeah. And then we know that people are then going off and having sex like that. It's painful and they're being coerced into doing stuff they don't want to do. This is boys and girls.
Yeah.
And, you know, so parents actually... You know, when you think about giving that iPhone to your child and they're 9, think about what's on it. And also, it's not just your child's phone that you may have filters on, because I was talking to a sexual medicine doctor. She said, actually, my child, you have twin boys, and she said, their phones have got filters, but I didn't realise their mate had showed it to them. But she actually did talk to the group of mums and said, do you realise that your sons have been looking at this? And the mums were like, well, we need to do something about it. She had, you know, she.
But I think technology is just, I can't keep up. I always think I'm quite good. You know, I'm on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, but I can never keep up with technology. And it's a major problem. And look, I think it's great that you're both here, because obviously, you know, tell us a little bit, just sort of to finish with, you know, why, I know it might sound obvious, why is it so important to sort of keep up an active sex life in midlife? Because obviously there are relationships which are breaking up. You know, the men, you know, I know Louise Newson, she's often talking to, you know, police about how, you know, men, you know, they still need to have sex, and they're obviously getting frustrated in their marriages because perhaps they're, you know, the women in their lives are just, you know, not able to continue.
Yeah, I know, so it's incredibly important, because it's an important part of people's lives. And when it suddenly ends, you know, if you hit the menopause and actually it's like, actually, it's really painful, or, you know, what's going on? I've got low libido. And the thing is, we always focus on penetrative sex as well. And I sort of say to women when they're trying to get back into sex, if they don't want it, just small steps. So just think about maybe prolonged foreplay, but maintaining that intimacy. But it's, orgasms are good for you. You know, they help you sleep. They, you know, they boost your immunity. They make you feel happy. They make sure that your vagina is viable, so we can actually have our smear tests and our pelvic examinations, as Jane's written in her book about vaginal atrophy. This is a really important part of women's health. And that's the problem. Women don't go for a smear test because it's painful. They avoid penetrative sex. I mean, let's face it, there's nothing worse. You think that penetration is going to feel painful, you're not going to feel sexy or aroused. And so it's a cycle. And actually, with the men as well, the men have erectile dysfunction, and we have to acknowledge that, because I'm afraid it's always put on women. But we advise an awful lot of men. We often speak to the woman and she says, well, I'm buying this, you know, this vibrator. And you end up having a conversation, it's actually because her partner's got erectile dysfunction, so she's buying it because he's unable to have penetrative sex. So we shouldn't always be thinking that the issue is with women. And let's face it, the majority of my customers are women. So women like sex. And I think we have to get away from this view that, you know, women don't like sex. Well, women don't like sex that's painful and that no longer feels pleasurable, because things change. And actually, things have changed for me personally. And so now I've tried different things. I've discovered my G-spot, which, you know, I didn't know where it was. And so actually, when you're in a long-term relationship, as you get older, your sexual... arousal and sensation does actually change. But the most important thing is for people to talk, and if they're in a relationship, and also if they're not in a relationship, for women to have regular orgasms, either be that with their partner or for solo play, because it is really important for them to carry on having regular orgasms.
So, and I think, look, I mean, it's great that you know, you both have written for us, and it's on the website, which actually, for people that are just hearing, our website's lattelounge.co. And the whole point of having the website is to basically have a resource kit where, you know, if people are embarrassed, at least they can go and have a look on the website and think, okay, well, actually, I've got this problem. I might need to go and see Samantha, or I might need to go and see Francine. And I just think we all need to keep talking and being open like we all have today. So thank you both really, you know, very
such
much.
Such a pleasure.
Thank you
very
much. We could talk for hours, actually.
Yeah.
Hours and hours.
Are we done?
Yes,
we're just getting started.
Sorry, and that to be continued.
Yes. So what's going on for you for next month?
Well, there's been, I mean, I haven't actually said, so in what happened in February was, I mean, there was loads that went on, and it kind of has gone on into March. But the Eve Appeal is our chosen charity that we work with now and we support, which is great. And I actually went to the House of Commons. They had a Make Time for Tea campaign, and we gave our first Latte Lounge check over to them. And this check was special to me, because this was, there was a random act of kindness day.
And somebody who, unbeknown to me, has so grateful for getting a lot of business through us, sent me a check and said, I feel very guilty that you're making no money, Katie, and I'm making an awful lot, and I want to give you some money, and you please use it however you wish to use it. And I said, look, I'm blown away by this generous offer. I'm actually going to give it to the Eva Peel. So it was a really lovely, you know, it was a special check for me to be able to give to them.
Well, yeah, because so it's the Latte Lounge at work.
Yeah, absolutely. So that, I mean, obviously the Eva Peel campaign was to raise awareness of ovarian cancer awareness month. But we've had blogs on, you know, eating disorders through the eyes of a mum on children's mental health awareness, which is a big thing. And I'm very keen to do more work with mental health in teens and young adults. And next, on Monday, actually, this Monday, I'm bringing together a group of mental health charities and mental health professionals and some parents to try and see sort of what's out there for support that I can signpost the women on our group to. Because I think there's just too many mums coming to our group, masses, daily, saying my child is self-harming, my child is anorexic, my child is depressed. And, you know, like a lot of these things, we actually don't know where to go. So we're just going to explore what's out there and whether we should be putting on some Latte Lounge sort of talks and events to sort of provide, you know, tools and signposting. So that's great. And that's Monday. So I will tell you all about that in April. And I'm really excited because it's our third birthday in June, and Liz Earl MBE is very kindly coming to our spa day. We've got a charity spa day in aid of the Eva Peel, and it's going to be at the Grove Hotel, which is a gorgeous hotel. And we've got a panel of experts, and Samantha is going to be on that panel with, I'm not going to say who yet, but we've got a lot of experts. And we're going to have a lovely spa day. So if anyone wants to come, please email me, katie@lattelounge.co. So that's really exciting. And what else? Very, very quickly, what else have we got going on? We have Stress Awareness Month, which I want to talk about stress, midlife stress. I think a lot of us just juggle too much. And we've got some great blogs about that. We've got Move More Month. Walk to Work Day, where our fitness expert is going to give some advice on how to move more. And lastly, I'm turning 50 in April. So I'm going to
Thank you. Fabulous 50 Club.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I might have to change the name of the group. But no, I honestly actually think it's an honour. A lot of people, you know, sadly don't get to reach this grand age. I'm going to celebrate it massively, absolutely. Big time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So loads going on, and I could go on and on and on, but thank you. You
know. And now that your gallbladder's out of the way, bring on the party.
Well, I wrote a blog called Hollow Inside night before, because I'm now minus quite a few organs. Yes.
The fire sale continues.
Exactly.
Anyway, well, thank you so much for coming today. It's been absolutely fantastic. And I also want to thank our sponsor, Silk, Natural Intimate Lubricant, again. And their website is www.silk.co.uk. And Silk is spelled S-Y-L-K. Thank you so much. And for more phenomenally fantastic women, please go to www.radiogorgeous.com.